parentheses around the second chunk, it means that the first chunk is optional to read. And it's really, really important, I think, why not to take the option to read the whole thing. Because I think they both go together kind of hand in hand. And I'll tell you why. The first part is, of course, Jesus talking about what defiles, okay? What makes you dirty? What makes you unclean? And he's making a point here that what he's talking about is, it's not the things that are external to you that defile you, it's the things that come from within. He's trying to make a point about the Ten Commandments, about the law, okay? And in the law, there is, you know, lots of room for interpretation and understanding and that sort of stuff, and otherwise you wouldn't have the 613 points of the Levitical Code, okay? And that's where you get the real string out of all the Ten Commandments to their nth degrees of interpretation, if you will. They're kind of like rabbit holes. I mean, have you ever gone down a rabbit hole of just taking one idea and just going, whoa! And you kind of go, I started at A, and I wound up at Z, but then I detoured at K, and you just kind of have to figure out where that logic kind of led. That's kind of how the Levitical Code is, okay? Otherwise, I mean, I don't know where you get from the Ten Commandments that you can't eat pork. Okay? Right? I like pork. I'm glad to eat pork, okay? But the thing is that, well, if you're adhering to the Levitical Code, no, can't eat pork, okay? And all washing rituals and everything like that. These are all ways of understanding or interpreting the law of the Ten Commandments to keep you on the straight and narrow, okay? And we do this all the time, right? We try to customize maybe eternal truths and tenets to fit our own households, our own lives, or whatever, okay? But what Jesus is talking about here is he's being confronted with the washing, the eating of food that isn't ritually clean, that sort of stuff. And if you take that in, doesn't that make you not in line with the law and what Jesus is saying? I'm sorry, actually. It's actually what comes out of you that is the thing that makes you a little sulky. Take, for instance, this very question. Have you ever said something that you regret? Yeah? Have you ever said something that you've ever regretted? I'll take it a little further. Have you ever said something that you thought was absolutely the right thing to say, and you were righteous in saying it, and it wasn't until after it was reframed to you or reflected back to you by somebody else that was absolutely the wrong thing to say? Okay? A lot of times we just say stuff, right? And 90% of the time we think we're right on the money, but we didn't really think about how that actually was received or understood, or whatever. This is where the great mystery of misunderstandings occur. And misunderstandings can be as benign as, oh, I don't know, if that's what you meant, oh, okay, to, I don't know, let's start World War III. There's a big gap in the understanding of misunderstanding. And so what Jesus is talking about here is kin to, I'm sure you've heard in Scripture when Jesus was talking about, you know, the tongue being like a sword, right? I mean, the tongue, our words really do mean something. And we can do a lot of good and a lot of damage with the words that come out of this hole, right here. And we've all experienced it. It wasn't a universal aspect of the human condition. Well, we would be totally different beings, I think. It's totally a universal thing. Now, this is a great lesson in and of itself, and it's a preachable point in and of itself, and awesome, end of story. But wait a second. We've got this second paragraph that's kind of linked with the first one, optionally read, okay, where Jesus himself is confronted with this very conundrum. You see, we get really great ideas stuck in our heads, and we want to run with them, and we may be absolutely right and that sort of stuff, but sometimes we can make gods out of our own thinking, our own ideals, even if we are right, even if we are justified. And we can put on those blinders like that. Now, you deal with horses, Linda, right? What happens with blinders? You lose your peripheral vision, right? And why do they put them on horses?
To keep them focused on
that. That's right. To keep them focused and away from distractions that may come out of nowhere. Keep focused, right? But sometimes when you're overly focused, you lose the bigger picture, right? And that bigger picture, you don't see the other horses coming behind you, or the meteorite, or whatever. You know, what to dodge. Okay. Well, this is what happens with Jesus. And this is actually a really important thing that occurs. He's in the area of Tyre and Sidon. Okay? This is non-Israelite territory. Okay? And he's confronted with this Canaanite woman who's heard of this Jesus. She even calls him by a title, a Jewish title, Son of David, right? I mean, she knows who he is. And she is begging for mercy, for help. She's probably heard through the grapevine and, you know, Facebook, Twitter, you know, that Jesus can do things. Jesus can heal. And she's coming after him for some help. Well, it's very clear in the scripture, there's no punches that are pulled here. He ignores her. And then his disciple, his crew, his posse, they even get a little hurt. Let's get rid of her. Because she keeps shouting after him. And then Jesus does something that I'm going to tell you will challenge any fluffy idea you have about Jesus right off the bat. You know, this little light of mine vision of church. He says something that's actually truly repugnant. He says, you know, I've come for the children of Israel. I've come for the house of Israel. I've come for a specific people. But you know what? Why would I spend my time with the energy and food and everything like that that's meant for the children and give it to the dogs? Whoa. Put the brakes on here. Jesus just went so far, not just to ignore somebody who is asking for help, but went so far as to discriminate against her and call her a dog. Now let's just pause here for a moment. This is why it's really important to realize that Jesus is 100% human and 100% divine. It's not 50-50. It's not left brain versus right brain for this stuff. This isn't, you know, split personality though. This is a whole level of mystery that we cannot possibly fathom and understand. Okay? 100% human? That means Jesus is wrestling with all the things that's going on in your head, Tom, your head, Samantha, all the stuff, everything you experience, all the mysteries of life, etc. And yet, 100% divine. Everything beyond that. And he just called this woman who is asking for help a dog. Wow. Things that come out of the mouth. Right? Now, we have to realize this is really rocky territory. This is really shaky ground. Because if Jesus could get away with that, then there wouldn't be salvation. It couldn't be. But she persisted. She persisted. She, this woman, this non-Israelite woman, may have just saved the whole enterprise of salvation by simply uttering this phrase. But even the dogs eat the food at the master's feet, or beneath the master's table. Wow. What was happening is that Jesus was actually given the opportunity to be faced with his own idolatry. The idolatry of the blind, focused task. I'm here to save the house of Israel. That's it. And I don't have time for anybody else. But we get to see in the course of time and space a struggle here. A struggle here that's saved by a woman. A woman whose very heart and desire to save her own child, which is doubly repugnant for him to call her a dog. If you are a parent or if you've ever known parents, etc., you know that there is nothing more powerful than the desire to save your child. Nothing more powerful than that. You give everything to make it happen. And for him to slight her in the worst way, the worst opportunity, the worst possible moment, this salvation bit is almost toast. She persists. She calls about on it. And she continues to ask for mercy. She could have turned and walked away. She could have given up on this whole endeavor. But no, she personified the very love that is eternal, the very love of God to God's own face. How's that for a twist? And what Jesus was able to exemplify then for all of us was humility. Great is your faith. Great is your faith. Be so as you desire. And the daughter's yielded. We get to see Jesus in a very unusual sort of way. Jesus, with humility, having to have humility. In fact, it's only through Jesus' own humility that we can even possibly fathom what forgiveness is all about. The line between the eternal and the not eternal, it was very thin in that moment. Very thin indeed. But she persisted. And Jesus chose not to be defiled. This is how it is with all of our lives. Those moments where we have the choice to go down the path of our own focused righteousness and the path that may be really uncomfortable. You know, when you get your handed to you by somebody, okay, you just fill in that with whatever it is, okay? When somebody calls you out and says, hey, you need to think about that very carefully, you could either dig in your heels and you could say you're right, and you very well could be right. You might have a permit given to allow you to do what you're going to do. The law may be on your side, but it doesn't make it necessarily right. And the only way you can see that rightness, the real rightness, is through humility. Right? Oh my gosh. I need to pause here. I need to look at it differently. And I need to see forgiveness. If we didn't have that moment, there's no way that we could possibly hear with any sort of sense of authenticity that Jesus knows what he's talking about when he's talking about love your neighbor as yourself. Simple as that. who is my neighbor? A select group of people that didn't act, feel the exact same way that I did, go to church, the same church that I believe in God. Are those only my neighbors? Or is it literally everybody? All stripes, all creeds, all walks, all whatevers. That's my neighbor. And I've got to listen. And I've got to be the one who exemplifies that humility. That's what Jesus chose. We're talking real vulnerability. God making God's self really, really, really vulnerable. It's not just being born as a baby sort of stuff. That's very symbolic of what it means to enter the world very vulnerably. But this was a very, very precarious and vulnerable moment. And it was saved, frankly, oddly, by one who persisted. Persist in seeking mercy. Persist in your humility. That's where the threshold of this world and the next really is. Persisting in that seeking of justice. Persisting in what is right. Not your own righteousness, but what is right. And you too can see heaven open up in ways that you never thought of. So we've got two examples today. We've got the example of a woman who is persistent. And we have an example of the Son of God, God Himself, being humble and acting in that humility and seeking a different